Welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. In this week's ABCA podcast, we check in with Homewood Flossmoor head baseball coach and counselor John McCarthy. Coach McCarthy was a draft out of high school and headed to Mesa Community College out of the Chicagoland area. He finished his undergraduate degree playing for Tony Robichaud and the Louisiana Raging Cajun baseball program. After his playing career, Coach McCarthy got his master's in school counseling from U-Lewis University and coached with the Illinois Sparks travel program. His next step in his journey took him back to the Catholic League in Chicago, coaching at Brother Rice. In this episode, we discuss what he learned from Tony Robichaud and John Scheff, blending travel baseball with your high school program, getting things turned around at Homewood Flossmoor, and how he's using his counseling degree to help his high school players. Let's welcome John McCarthy to the podcast. Here, John McCarthy, head coach, school counselor at Homewood Flossmoor, but we go way back. You're at Brother Rice for a long time, and then when you first started working with Sparks is when we first met.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been quite a journey, and it's been nice to develop our relationship. And it's just baseball brings you in so many different ways, and the greatest part of the game is connecting with people that you haven't connected with in a while. So, yeah.
What about Tony Robichaud?
Yeah, Coach Robe. So I was from Chicago and went down to play for Coach Robichaud, and it was a wonderful experience. We had Coach Scheff there at the time. Coach Scheff is currently at Virginia Tech. Coach Babb was there, and I was really, really lucky. I think throughout my career, I've been very, very lucky to have great coaches. And Coach Robe was he was one of the best motivators I've ever been around. Super organized, detailed. Everything was mapped out. He was a guy that you can always count on. It's tough with coaches, and then you stay connected, but then, unfortunately he passed away and, it really hit me. And, Coach Robe to me, I felt was bulletproof. I felt like he was Superman. And, so when he initially had the heart attack, I thought he was just going to get right up. He'd be fine. He'd get through it. And, I think it's tough as players and coaches to connect as much as we need to, right? I think we're always working on that. But at the same time, Coach Robe had a big impact on me personally as a player and as a coach and a man and a husband and a father. He's done wonders for me.
What are some of the messages you're taking from him and bringing it into what you're doing with your guys?
Well, compete. He always talked about competing, and I don't think he was very, very accountable. And, one thing that we try to do here at HF is, not make excuses for ourselves, be honest with where we're at, what we need to work on. And from there, try to make those next steps to get it better. And, the next thing was his chemistry. He was a big chemistry person. He wanted teams to really get along. He set up leadership meetings and those types of things to allow us to, interact and spend time together. And, then on top of that, it was the experience. My junior year, my first year with the program, my first 2 years, I actually spent with Coach Sorelli at Mesa Community College. And Coach Sorelli is, a legend in Arizona. So I go to Coach Robe, and that first year I was lucky enough to go to Hawaii. And you know, I think the experience also was something he was great at. You know, he set up so many experiences for us, and you know, those are treasured memories. So what I try to do, what we try to do at HF is, you know, try to play the most difficult schedule we can, create opportunities for our kids, create a different type of messaging. Like this morning, we took our team, we have a pay it forward program at Homewood Flossmoor. Basically the pay it forward program is choosing kind and loving to read. I'll never forget when Coach Robe took me to an elementary school and we, you know, we did this whole routine. And part of the routine that I use today is from his message with that group of kids. Now, you know, what an amazing, amazing communicator. He took a group of about 60 kids and got them to listen. You know, I had about 15 kids today with a teacher, first grade teacher, and it was still, you know, difficult for me to manage. And, but, you know, I'm growing. And I think Coach Robe was growing at the time I was with him. And that's another thing is, you know, development, keep developing, keep trying to get better, keep trying to grow. How can we make things better? How can we make the experience better for our kids?
Did he define competition or competing or chemistry? Did he actually define that for you guys, or did he just talk about it?
Well, it was every day. We, you know, we would have a lot of inter squads. You had to earn your way in the approach that he had for us earning playing time. I mean, it wasn't given to you. You had to earn it. You had to go out every day. You had to compete. You know, when I was down there, I mean, I was from Chicago and there was a lot of people from Louisiana. So it was a different culture, but one thing we always connected on was those guys love to compete. And, we had a lot of junior college guys. We had a couple of junior college guys from Texas at that point. And, you know, those guys just love to compete. So, you know, I fit in perfect because I wanted to earn everything. I wanted to felt like, you know, every day you had to go out and do something to help the ball club win. You had to earn it. And, I think that's what's missing a little bit with kids these days. It's just, you know, you got to earn it. You got to earn it every day. And sometimes you got to earn it in practice. And, you know, that was one thing. So in terms of, you know, defining compete, it was an everyday thing. I mean, every day you were around them, you were competing. We, you know, we would do these, exercise. We'd do a lot of lifting, but then we would do on top of that, like, you know, run around the field. We would run around, do laps, just, auxiliary stuff to allow ourselves to compete. We had indoor stuff with med balls and, you know, dynamic training with speed training. So there was a lot of things they incorporated. But you don't realize how lucky you are. I mean, Coach Sheff was there too. Coach Sheff is one of the finest people there is in college baseball. I mean, you know, there's no secret to, you know, why he's so successful. It's because he's so genuine. He's a genuine person. And when you're that genuine and, you know, you learn from Coach Robe, it's like, man, you know, it's just, you know, it gives you an opportunity to be successful.
Did you need the 2 years at Mesa coming from Chicago before you went to a four-year school? Did you need those 2 years?
Yeah, I had a unique path that I think is so I was drafted out of high school, felt like I could play at a really, really high level, chose not to sign at that point. And, you know, that's the greatest thing. I had my dad and my mom, both my parents were great, and they kind of walked me through. And I think my dad knew that I wasn't ready for that. And my mom as well. And so I had a great, a legend in Chicago, this guy named Gary Johnson. He was my travel coach from, you know, eighth grade all the way till basically sophomore year of college. And, you know, he had provided an opportunity for a bunch of Chicago kids to go out to Mesa. And so I went sight unseen. I went, just took a leap of faith because I love Gary Johnson and what he provides and who he is, and trusted him, and it was the right decision. And so I went out to Mesa, and then I run into Coach Sorelli, Buck Sorelli. And I had him, Coach Rose, that are currently still there. And those guys were old school. And, you know, I thought I was pretty good. And I learned right away how much talent we had at the junior college level, number one. So I immediately saw that, and I realized, okay, I got to really play well. I got to get the hit and run down. I got to get the bunt down when he asks. But then on top of that, Coach Sorelli, I thought I was good. And it really put me in my place. And my dad, my parents, they loved that. They couldn't get enough of it, you know, and it was tough love. It was a little different. My high school experience was at St. Rita, and it's a Catholic school in Chicago. And I was blessed. I had Coach Nee, Coach Zunica, Coach Fiore. Those guys are legends around here. And Coach Zunica, you know, I was lucky enough to play on varsity as a freshman. He really was like a father figure to me. And so it was a unique transition from, you know, Coach Zunica was a little more love and support. And then, you know, I went out to Mesa, and Coach Sorelli was, you know, real firm right away, you know, and tough on me. And, but he had a reason and he had a method for his man. And it wasn't just for me. It was for all of our players, you know, and he's had a track record of success. You could see it. Coach Cirelli is anybody that knows anything about junior college baseball in Arizona knows Coach Cirelli. And, you know, but he was,
part of that seeing who's going to make it, right? I mean, part of that with the junior college is seeing who can handle it and who's going to make it, correct?
Well, junior college baseball, you get out there and there's just, I couldn't get over the amount of talent. You know, we had a tremendous amount of talent my freshman year and sophomore year. We had less talent my sophomore year and were able to make it to the junior college World Series, which was huge for us and, you know, great experience. And, but yeah, I just couldn't get over the amount of talented players, number one. And then number two, how much grind guys had, how much they put in, how much the effort that they did. And then, you know, from there, then you assess and you realize there's a lot of things you have to do to get on the playing field. And it's not just a matter of whether the coach likes you or not. It's, you know, what else can you do to help the team win? Can you defend? Can you hit cutoffs? Can you bunt? Can you hit and run? You know, can you drive in runs with two outs? A lot of little things that I felt were my game. And like I said, but I had to wait my turn too. You know, there was a lot of times in junior college where I had to wait my turn and be patient and understand, you know, you're not going to play every day.
You came back home then that summer to play?
Came back home that summer, played with Gary Johnson. And, you know, obviously I loved him. So I was able to play in a local summer collegiate league those 2 years. My junior year, I went to Alaska. Alaska was an incredible experience. And that I was in the Kenai Peninsula. I don't know if you've been out to Alaska, but that Kenai Peninsula, you take one of those small planes and, you know, one person on there, you got like three people in the back. And, you know, that was a tremendous, I had a lot of guys from California that introduced me to a lot of California baseball. We had a lot of kids from Pepperdine and just the West Coast. And, you know, like I said, that's the funny thing about baseball all across, you know, anybody who's played knows, like, no matter what level, no matter where you're at, people get along with people that want to compete. And Coach Robe used to always say, you know, high achievers are going to attract high achievers. You know, mediocre people are going to attract mediocre people. And, you know, that always stuck with me. And, you know, they're going to want to be around people that want to achieve at a high level and compete. So I never had issues fitting in with teams.
Was coaching always going to be there when you're finished? I mean, is that what you wanted to do or are you sure?
Yeah, you know, I was one of those, and now being a school counselor, you deal with students all the time, and I'm always jealous of the student that comes in and is like, Mr. McCarthy, I know I want to be a lawyer. And I'm like, man, I'm so jealous. You know, how do you know what you want to do? And so that path for me was JD. You know, I think, you know, I always had friends in high school, and in my head, I was like, man, I want to get an education. That, you know, and you're like, I think as a male, you're like, oh, no, I'm going to do business. And so I kind of bounced around. I had a job in business. I worked downtown for the Illinois Department of Transportation for a couple of years. And then, you know, the one guy that pulled me back into coaching is a guy named Kevin Sefcik and Dave Payton. They run the Illinois Sparks. And, you know, Coach Zunica had helped lay a path for me to meet Kevin and meet Dave. And boy, was I blessed. So I got into summer coaching and just fell in love with it. And I was like, man, I got to do this for a living, you know, and this is something that I want to do. And it was just such an enjoyable experience, partly because I had Dave Payton and I had Kevin Sefcik really help guiding me along. And Kevin's the current head coach at Marist High School. Dave's got three boys that all played baseball, a couple that are still playing. But Dave Payton was one of the most selfless people I've ever met. I've never seen a person spend more time trying to help other people get to the college level. And I learned so much from them. And then on top of that, just a practice end, you know, they really helped just guide me because I needed so much guidance. I didn't understand, like, as a player to a coach, you don't understand the concepts of how practice work. And then it takes even more time to understand really what coaching is, which is, you know, what I've learned most is not necessarily the X's and O's, but the Jimmys and the Joeys. You know, how are we going to treat these kids? And that's kind of been my path, and I'm still not there yet. I think I need some more growth and need to get better. There's areas of growth for me that I've identified, but that's what I learned most in this whole process. But Dave and Kevin had that the entire time. They were incredible leaders.
Playing in the Catholic League, is that what drew you to Brother Rice, coaching at Brother Rice?
Yeah, you get an opportunity to coach in the Catholic League, you got to take it. And, you know, I got a great opportunity from the president there. And, Dr. Burns, and he was great, and brought me in, gave me an opportunity. We were, we just tried to build the program, and I had a great coaching staff with me. The there's guys that are still there, and I'm sure you know them, coaches. We got Billy Kopp, who's a legend in the Chicagoland area. You got Sean McBride, who's the current head coach there. You got Tim O'Connell, and you got Anthony Lococo. And all four of those guys, my assistant coaches, really did a good job of just help shaping me. So, you know, you get there, you're surrounded with the right people, but the Catholic League is a great, great conference. And I'll tell you why. There's passion. People, you know, dislike each other, and people want to win, and it's cutthroat. And then, you know, you add in, you know, there's recruiting, you know, for all, and it's just, it's a great thing. I think it's stressful, right? You know, I'm probably going to lose a few years on that, but at the same time, you know, you love that. You love that as a baseball guy.
Is that the biggest difference between going from Brother Rice to HF is the recruiting piece?
Yeah, I mean, we're a big public school, so Homewood Flossmoor has been great. It was a great transition for me. It was great for my family, and you know, they have you know, a deep history of baseball at the school, so. And that really attracted it to me. They have a great history. They got a great community here of Homewood and Flossmoor. So, you know, you get that opportunity. And then, you know, the Southwest Suburban Conference is really, really good. You got Lincoln Way East. You got Lincoln Way West. You got Lockport, Andrew, Stagg, Sandberg, Bolingbrook, all of these schools that, you know, are just outstanding. So I think what's missing there, it's passionate. I think there's definitely a level of excellence for sure. But you know, I think the deep rooted Catholic is just the difference. You know, it's just a real, it's tough, you know, and there's so many people involved that want to see you win. And so, you know, people are tough, you know, but that's at the same time, critics, you know, they make you stronger.
What are you taking in with your counseling and what you're doing with your players?
Yeah, counseling's been great. Great. I've had some really good mentors all along the way, but you know, counseling is about developing people, and that's what I learned the most, is trying to figure out what, you know, what the goals are, what the process is, where they're currently at, what can I do to help enhance that process. You know, I have a couple of things that I live by, and you know, try to be demanding, not demeaning. Try to stay present with the kids, try to be there with the kids, like I'm trying to be present with you right now, you know, right? Not think about other things, be present. Try to be honest, and then you know, the most important thing to me is trying to bring out the best in each person that I deal with. And that's counseling and baseball. And I'm really, you know, I think just like Dave said, Coach Payton, Dave Payton, he used to always say, you know, hey, you got to find a way to serve these kids. And even though things may be tough and parents may be tough, you gotta search for the bright spot, and you gotta search for your passion, and you gotta search for, you know, just the right way to do things.
So you have crisis training on your resume. And just I think there's a tough time for high school and college kids. We just had a James Madison softball player just passed away this past weekend, and I think we're seeing more and more of it now. And how are you maybe trying to head off some of that at the pass with what you're dealing now with social media? I mean, our players now deal with a lot more than what we did when we were playing. How are you trying to head some of that off of the pass with your own players?
So since I started at Brother Rice in 2012 to where we are today in 2022, the biggest thing for me is just these poor kids and social media. It's very, very difficult, and it's immediate gratification. And what they deal with on a daily basis is, so I'm very, very aware of it. And I think we have great empathy for that. I have a great coaching staff with me. So, you know, one of the coaches, Greg Jones, is a social worker at the school. So, you know, he really understands the social emotional side of things. And we have Kevin Coe, you know, a Chicago legend, Chris Cunningham was a legend, and then Vince Davis, who's a legend as well. All those guys are coach. So I think what we try to do, what our process is, and I'm not saying we're perfect at it, but just try to create relationships and try to have an open line of conversation, whether, you know, it's tough to talk to the head coach, I think sometimes, and, you know, assistant coaches, that's where, if you have great assistants, which I've been lucky enough to have, you know, you really, they open up lanes of communication, and it just begins and ends with communication. Try to communicate as much as you possibly can, try to, you know, understand their side of things.
Hey, did working with the Sparks first help? I mean, going, being on the travel side and then getting into the high school side, it seems like it would help a little bit to maybe start on that side first.
Oh, it's huge, huge. I met so many great people. So, you know, the college coaches, they interact with those travel coaches, and then being on that circuit, understanding the type of player, understanding the level of commitment. What's changed so much in the North that has allowed us, our high school teams, to get better right away and compete with teams in warm weather states is the facilities.
Yes.
The Bo Jackson Dome that we have in Lockport and the people that run that, Tyler Thompson, I mean, they do an incredible job, you know, allowing our kids to be ready to play day one. And that's what's so much different. So there's no like, you know, kids come now. And for us as high school coaches, it used to be like, okay, well, you know, you got to develop the arm. Well, that's developed in the offseason. Okay, you got to get live at bats. That's developed in the offseason. So it allows us to pick up and run with it. Now, there's some major difference between travel ball and high school baseball. High school baseball is everyday practice, and it's more team practice, you know. And so I think they both play off each other, and I think there's a role for both. You know, but the one thing that we, you know, Coach Robisa always talk about that with the select model is everybody plays. And I think kids have a difficult time when you set a lineup and understanding that you have to earn playing time, and you don't just earn it in game. You earn it in practice. You earn it when we can trust you in practice day in, day out. And then the best part about high school baseball is that's different from travel for me is you really know the kid, you know, the grades, you know, how the teachers, you know, how do they respect, you know, how much do they respect their teachers? What kind of work ethic do they have? Are they there every day at practice on time? And, you know, that whole process is fun to go through, but the travel situation was great, man. It's just highly elite baseball. You know, sometimes the only issue is obviously, you know, you go there, you have a pitching staff, you're starting these two guys at these certain times. So it takes away a little bit of the strategy, but, you know, at the same time, you're trying to set kids up for college baseball, you know, and that's what these guys are doing. And that's not just the Sparks. There's all kinds of different order, top tier, Chicago Elite, Rake City, all these people are doing just an incredible, incredible job.
You guys still have a summer season?
It's starting to die out. It's starting to really die out. It's
that's
just
very unique. Most people don't know that about Illinois. That was an extremely unique situation because there was also a summer high school season if you wanted to participate in it.
Yeah, my first five seasons at Brother Rice, we had a robust schedule, like a 20-25 game schedule. Now we're seeing less and less just because our high school coaches just can't field a team in terms of, like, you know, number one, kids, number two, arms, you know, specifically the arms. And I understand it. Like, the kids are trying to go out and showcase themselves for a college, so they want their arm to be ready for that weekend. And, you know, I definitely see value in the summer baseball at the high school level, but at the same time, I think what's best for kids is to allow them to go out and play and try to showcase themselves and try to earn a scholarship because, you know, they're learning a lot of team baseball and it's a long season with the spring season. So we're seeing it kind of just decrease year after year in terms of, you know, I guess high schools that are having a team in the summer. So we're thankfully still one, but, you know, who knows, that could change in the next 5 years.
I mean, how are you balancing what's best for the player as opposed to what's best for the program? Because those two things don't always mash up.
Yeah, I try to take the player side and I try to listen to what they're saying and what they want to do. But yeah, it's difficult. You know, you're trying to have an off-season program of lifting and a lot of kids can't make because they have their own lifting program. And you're trying to do, you know, open gyms, which we're allowed to do in the state of Illinois. And, you know, those are difficult for kids to attend because then it conflicts with their travel ball stuff. But like I said, they work together and the travel ball programs do a great job of allowing our high school kids to be ready to play day one. So, you know, I think me coming from travel ball, I definitely understand the value of travel ball. So I don't really get too upset about it. But it's a challenge trying to set up a program because, you know, winning programs win in the off season. That's what I learned at, you know, Mesa. We had 6 a.m. workouts with Coach Sorelli. We had a mile run every week with Coach Sorelli. Coach Robichaud was an artist, he had a masterful plan every off season. I mean, that's where we really gained, you know, our ability to get an edge on opponent. You're trying to get an edge. And that's the only thing that it conflicts with is you're trying to get an edge in the off season as a high school program. It's just hard to really do so. And the rules don't set it up because, you know, open gyms are kind of just roll out the balls and, you know, get them out there and try to keep them safe.
Did Coach Robe try to switch that stuff up or was it the same both years you were there? Did he try to switch things up?
Yeah, we switched it up. My first year, we had a veteran squad. We had a senior-led squad. And, you know, so we did a lot more like almost like, you know, character building. We did more team bonding, more challenges. And like, you know, with med ball tosses, just aerobic type stuff. My next year, we were a younger squad. We had less seniors. We had to do a lot more baseball stuff. you know, a lot more baseball stuff, and everything was really baseball geared because we had to get so much better on the field. So, you know, that's his brilliance. You know, you don't know that at the time. You're like, man, why is this different than the next year? But he understood the type of team he had. You know, we had a younger team my senior year, and, you know, we had to get guys ready to play.
What are you implementing from him now at HF? I mean, are there similar things that you're keeping, or do you need to switch it up for the high school guys?
I keep in a lot of things. I mean, you know, first and third plays, our bunt coverages, our development of practice. We try to have practice plans every day, try to, you know, really go over. But, you know, I remember time and time again, we would go over situational baseball, scoring runs at second. You know, I try to implement a lot more inter squads and like try to open up, you know, live pitching. We try to do live pitchers versus hitters bunting. So those things are what I took from Coach Sheff was our hitting coach. And the one thing that he did a great job was he let every individual be that individual. And I never forgot that. He had a plan. There was no doubt. We had a great disciplined plan, but he let every hitter be the type of hitter that they wanted to be. So I try to be like that to the best of my ability. I don't try to get into, you know, the mechanics of the swing, because everyone's got like, you know, a swing doctor. And, you know, I don't try to get too much into it and try to, you know, the biggest thing that we're trying to do, I find more than ever, is simplify the message. There's so many messages. These poor kids have so many things going through their head at one time. Sometimes just, you know, see ball, hit ball, take, you know, and you do it. You've helped me with this more than anybody, along with your podcast, is we talk about all the time. Take a deep breath, get present, slow down. Don't let your mind wander. Stay here with us at this moment. You know, just compete, try to focus on little things like that. And, you know, that's been our biggest change in our program in terms of, you know, trying to get present. It's trying to stay present, trying to be present, and not let results, and this is from Coach Springer from your podcast, not let results really, you know, decide your next at bat. And that's a process, you know, and I think that's been more in the last 5 to 7 years of people talking about that, and breath and, you know, social emotional issues and those types of things that are beginning to really, you know, be commonplace for our, you know, these kids. Cause like I said, it's just the messages. Everyone's telling them one thing after another. And the highly elite kid, that poor kid is getting tons of messages other than just go out and, you know, try to get a good pitch to hit and put a good swing on it.
I worked youth camp last week. We worked on breathing. That was one of the first things we did to try to get them to slow down. It's amazing. Like, yeah, I had to go back to the substitute teaching days with these young bucks, and I would be like, hey, we're going to keep doing this until one, we're quiet, and two, we stop touching each other. Like, that was it. And I held them accountable for it. I'm sure they're like, who is this crazy old man trying to get us to breathe? But they laid down, and I was like, yeah, we're going to keep doing this until we can be quiet. And it's amazing. They get up, these, you know, 6, 7, 8 year olds. I'm like, how do you feel? They're like, feel great. I'm like, okay, that's why we did it. You know, I know you don't always understand that, but it really is maybe the only time of the day that they can just check out for a little bit, even if it's for 20 to 30 seconds. That may be the only time that day they get to do that. And it's practice for a reason. If they can keep doing it, they'll be able to quiet their mind a little bit. I don't know if you've seen what Coach Sheff is doing at Virginia Tech. That team can hit. Him and Coach Elbin. Coach Elbin, his hitting guy at Virginia Tech's a really good hitting guy. So they are tearing it up right now.
That's not surprising to me. I mean, Coach Sheff is, I just think he's just so genuine. You know, he's just a genuine person. You don't know how lucky you are until you leave a place, but, that's awesome.
What are some of the favorite drills you brought from your previous coaches that you're bringing into practice?
We like a lot of movement. Our practices are very similar to a football practice. You know, we try to keep things moving, I think we need to do a better job with BP. I think the traditional BP is something that we're working through, but, you know, because there's a lot of standing around, I think that's the only, but at the same time, guys got to hit on the field, and you're right. Visual imagery is really important. So, you know, I think the BP part is the only part that I want to improve. And, you know, obviously we have stationary work, you know, different things. It's not everybody standing on the field at one time watching. We have groups. And, you know, the one thing we've implemented a lot with our facility is being able to bunt every day, you know, being able to bunt off an ATEC machine. We get the ATEC out, you bunt every day. You got to bunt every day. Our BPs are pretty structured in terms of base running and those types of things. But, In terms of practice plans and those things, trying to keep things moving. We try to keep things, everything to be a 10 to 15 minute segment. You know, I got a great drill from Coach Payton, Dave Payton, and Kevin Sefcik. It's a two-man drill with two fungo hitters, getting every position at one time, getting everybody moving, getting as many reps as you can. And, you know, that's one thing that Kevin Sefcik used to tell me all the time, man. He's like, Mac, it's reps, you know, in-season reps. Just try to get those reps, try to get them in a routine, try to get them, you know, throwing and throwing accurately. So, but for us, you know, what's really, really for any new coach out there, it's structured throwing. That's one thing that
I still don't see a lot of it. I said it the other day. I go see a lot now, and I still don't see structured throwing programs. And I think it's the best thing that you can do for your players is to have them have a structured throwing program every day.
So Coach Cirelli had that, and I'm not going to lie to you, some of my teammates will know, I was the biggest complainer. I complained about it every day. I complained about it to everybody. And so what do I find myself doing? The exact same thing. it was just great. We used to, Coach Cirelli had us at different distances and sitting at different distances. He would time it out. He was so structured with that throwing program. And then from there, what do we do really, really well? You got to catch and throw. Defense is so critical to the game of baseball. If you cannot catch and throw, you can't, you know, make the plays defensively, you have no chance. And, you know, that's what I've learned along the way with all of the experiences that I've had with the different coaches I've had. It's just, you know, you got to be able to catch and throw. And that started with Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson, our teams never were great hitting teams, but the one thing that we were able to do to stay in games, we were able to pitch, throw strikes. And then from there, we were able to pick up the ball and throw it to first base, you know, and Coach Zunica was big on that as well. He was more on the offensive side as well. But, you know, all of those guys helped shape, you know, my philosophy on this. But structured throwing is critical. That's one thing that's part of our practice plan every day that, you know, we got away from for a little bit. We thought we could get away from it, and we learned quickly that, you know, you need to have that. And kids, I think kids like structure.
Yep. Hey, you got a new facility. I mean, what were you doing before? Where were you practicing before the field was finished?
So, yeah, so we have a great group of kids. We got a really talented squad. So, you know, we're pretty blessed here at Home of Floss. We have an indoor facility, a 30-yard indoor. So, you know, that first couple weeks was great. I think, you know, once you get past March 15th, though, you want to be outside. And so we've been able to get on a turf football field, which has been good. You know, we've been in that indoor facility a lot. One thing that we've learned, and our kids have had a tough time being consistent, is we're getting a brand new turf infield. One thing that I'll tell you about the turf infield, yeah, games is great, but for high school coaches, it's practice. Yeah. How many times can you practice and practice on a baseball field? And, you know, so we haven't been consistent. And what we've learned is that we're not consistent enough because we're not on a baseball field practicing. And, you know, it seems very simple, but it really is. It's a big part of things. Like, you got to get on a baseball field, get used to seeing fly balls on a baseball field. Just
throwing outside's a big one.
Oh, huge. And we've managed it to the best of our ability. I think we've had good practices, but, you know, being back on a baseball field and then knowing moving forward that now when there's rain, we don't have to cancel practice or go inside or not get on the field. That's the toughest thing for coaches with dirt fields. It's like, they're out there for game days. You know, you're able to really get it good for game days, but it's the practice days that you really need that you can't get out there. And then it puts you at a disadvantage, you know, and we got some great coaches here, but that it sets them back because they can't get on a field for practice.
Man. You know, I dealt with it twice. Iowa was same thing. And then Western natural surface. And then you'd have to go inside. Hey, do you have a temp cutoff temp? I mean, for coaches that are listening in, Chicago is chilly in the spring. Do you have a temp cut off for your team? It's like, okay, at this temp, we're not going out.
Yeah, ironically, we had to cancel a game today because it's a high of 39 degrees. So yeah, it's you know, Chicago is beautiful. You know, like when you get in the summer, there's nowhere better than Chicago. The spring, unfortunately, you know, it'll be like on Saturday, it was 80 degrees and sunny, and it was unbelievable atmosphere, great fans, everything. And then today, move forward 3-4 days, and you know, it's a high of 38 with wind and cloudy, you know, not even the sun. So it's been a brutal spring for us, and I think that's kind of escalated everybody in the area to try to get turf fields because it allows, you know, every kid to have a better experience.
Are you having to do much fundraising?
Yeah, we do. We do a lot of different modes of fundraising, but yes, fundraising is important. The school does a great job giving us a budget. But if you want the extra things and you want to take trips and, you have to find vehicles to help fundraise for, we started a Viking baseball booster club here, and that's been really successful. And, you know, that club has allowed us to, you know, just have those extras that you need to have a great program, you know, just an extra jersey here. You know, they took care of our hotels in Louisville, which was outstanding. Went down to Louisville and played for, you know, 3-4 days. And you just can't do that without their support.
Who'd you play down in Louisville?
So we had a great schedule. We played Trinity. We played St. Xavier. So those two teams we targeted where I came from. So Coach McBride at Brother Rice, he brings his teams down and they play those two teams. So Andy Porta at St. Xavier has an all-turf field. And then not only that, he's got just an incredible program and, you know, the high character kids, quality games, tough. And then he would go to Trinity. It was the first time we had played Trinity. They have an all-turf field and their program was off the charts in terms of, you know, how they approach their BP, just their discipline level. They were a very, very disciplined squad. And, you know, those coaches do an incredible job down there. We're lucky to have a relationship with them.
Yeah, my coach was smart back in the early 90s. We went over and played Edwardsville. Even though we're from Indiana, we went and played an Edwardsville tournament back when Edwardsville was on their, you know, 40-game win streak. So it was good to actually tangle up with them. We actually beat them. We beat them my junior year, and they were good, really good.
Yeah, that's big. And you guys had an incredible team, you know. And some of the things I learned from the things you speak about a lot with, you know, you and your dad, but your program from high school, just like – you know, the level of intensity of your kids and just how disciplined it was. And, you know, I still can't believe you guys went out and won like 30 games in a row, 35 games. I mean, that's just incredible, losing like one game your senior year. So I think that's on my bucket list of things. If I could do it, it'd be that dominant. I think that's just amazing, that level of consistency out of a baseball squad. I still don't know how you guys did it. It's just, to get guys to
a lot of us, the arms. I mean, I'd say that wholeheartedly when you have some of the arms that we had and strike throwers that, you know, you talked about it, playing catch, you know, those teams, if you would have watched that team practice or whatever, you would have been like, okay, they're okay. Like, I mean, they're, you can kind of look here and see maybe a college guy, maybe a college guy, but then you watch this play and it's like, okay, never made errors, averaged like 10 walks a game offensively. So we just wore teams down, is really what it was. And I don't think that's ever changed about baseball is, the teams that play good defense and the teams that throw strikes, they're just going to wear the other team down. And so, you know, you may lose a game here and there, but overall you're going to win most of your games because the other team is going to find a way to lose. And you see it now, like I go to a lot of college and high school games now, you know, was fortunate to go over to Cary and watch the National High School Invitational Tournament. Those 16 teams over there threw strikes and played good defense. And offensively, okay, but, you know, Stoneman Douglas has a really good squad. Orange Lutheran has a really good squad. But even the other teams in the tournament, that's what stuck out about those teams is they play good baseball. They're going to find a way to play good baseball.
Well, and it's culture. Like, you know, your culture within your program in high school, I'm sure every day your guys went out and said, we're going to win today. Yep. You know, we're going to find ways to win. And that's what I'm learning most about, you know, the teams that are very, very successful in Illinois. And there's a lot of them, Edwardsville, you know, currently right now, Brother Rice, St. Lawrence, it's their, you know, their culture is just really off the charts. And Coach Robe used to talk about it all the time. He's like, you know, how tough can you get your culture without being reprimanded by a soft society? And, you know, that always stuck with me. And it's the truth though, how those cultures are tough. Their kids are tough. The kids talk tough. They're intense in the game. They get on and off the field. And, you know, I'm sure your team in high school, you know, guys were ready to go every day. And that was the culture. The culture was, hey, we're going to win a baseball game today. And this is how we're going to do it. And if you're not living up to your end of the bargain, or you're not ready to play, you got to be accountable. You know, that's one thing I learned at UL Lafayette. That was the type of atmosphere Coach Robe had. I remember my junior year, two guys getting in a fist fight. And we're having one of the best seasons we've ever had. They're in the dugout having a fist fight because, you know, guys weren't ready to make a play. And that accountability, when you have that within teams, it is an amazing thing. We had this closer from, you know, small town in Louisiana, and you know, he would get in guys' grill if they weren't ready to play or if they weren't making the plays that it took to be. And that's what made the team great. You know, I mean, coaches can do so much, but it's the culture of the group that really allows that team to take that next level.
I mean, are you talking much with your guys about healthy confrontation? I think all good competitors have a little bit of an edge. You can't let it become a distraction, but good competitors have an edge. Are you trying to talk to your guys about healthy confrontation? I think social media has taken away a lot of that healthy confrontation piece now. And are you able to talk to your guys a little bit about healthy confrontation?
It's tough for guys. It's tough for kids these days and to stand out. And, you know, I think there's more quiet leadership in today's, you know, game. There's more kids leading by example. Kids are the same. They're the best. I mean, you know, kids haven't changed one bit. It's just the environment around these poor kids. And, you know, they do a great job. Our kids are, you know, we got a great group of kids that encourage each other. But yeah, confrontation, I think, is, you know, I played back in 2000, you know, middle 2000s, so 2002 to 2005, six. So it's like, you know, that was a different time, you know, and, you know, parents were different and the way they talked. And, you know, I'll never forget, you know, I told my mom, I was like, hey, you know, Coach Sorelli's pretty tough on me. And she's like, look, you're not leaving. You know, you're not leaving. We're staying here. We're going to see it through. And, you know, I remember like almost wanting some sympathy and, you know, parents have a big part of that, you know, and if they're not, you know, giving kids excuses, then, you know, you give your kid an opportunity to be successful because the world's tough. You know, I mean, you're going to go out. I mean, you go to a job interview, you don't get the job. You know, your mom ain't going to call the employer. It just doesn't work that way. And sometimes I feel like, you know, we got to get back to some core things in the world today. And, you know, that will create a stronger and tougher environment because tough times, you know, tough people create easy times. And sometimes those easy times lead to, you know, a softer environment. And, you know, it's just a cycle of things. So hopefully we can, you know, it's a challenge. There's no doubt. And, you know,
well, you feel like a bad parent now. I mean, that was hard. Mine are older. Thank goodness mine are on the tail end of it, 19 and 16. But those are some hard conversations with our kids because you're trying to keep them accountable and they don't see any examples of that. So you feel like a bad parent sometimes because like you're not going to cave in on that. But you want them to be successful. And so that comes with some tough choices as a parent because they just don't see it now. Oh. And so you have to be extremely strong now. And you've got young kids, you know, and I was going to ask you how you're dealing with your young kids right now with that, because they're probably not seeing any of those examples.
Yeah, I sympathize with our parents too. And that's one thing that's helped. Kids have helped me understand the parent side of it. At first I didn't understand it, and that's been a growth thing for me. And, you know, I understand it more than ever, but I also stick to my guns on like, look, we're not looking for this, that we, you know, out of our programs, we just want people that care. And when they care and they're asking you to be accountable, that's not criticizing my son, Jack, my daughter, Nora, or my son, Quinn. That's them trying to hold a level of accountability. And that's, so we welcome it. It's a challenge. You know, you have, so, you know, I'm a parent now, so you have parent friends and you hear some stories and you want to stand up to it, but at the same time, you're in a peer group. And I think that's where parents have a tough time. I think more parents would stand up to other parents, but you know, it's difficult. And, yeah, I mean, it's such a challenging world and you're trying to navigate it to the best of your ability. But, you know, with our kids, Meg and I, my wife, Meg, who's Southside, tough, family was tough. It's pretty easy for us. She, you know, she understands, hey, she won a state championship in high school. She played at Mother Macaulay, which is one of the, you know, the premier volleyball programs in the country, not just the state of Illinois, the country. And, you know, she was an undersized player and had to earn her way. And, you know, she always talked, I tell her stories about, you know, kids and what they do. And, you know, she was a player that played JV up until senior year, had to wait her turn. And so she gets it. And thank God I have that. If I didn't have that, it would be a difficult conversation. But, you know, I was like you. I was lucky. My dad, you know, Coach Zunica brings me up, gives me this great experience as a freshman. And he looks me in the eye after we lose our final game and says, look, man, we're not transferring. We're not going anywhere. If this doesn't work out and someone else comes in as a freshman and takes your spot, that was the best conversation that he ever could have given me. No excuse, you know, like he left it away from excuses. And, you know, I think once we can be accountable as a group and, you know, as a peer group and see these things and make adjustments and try to understand, we can't find umpires. Can't find umpires.
I was going to ask you, is in my list.
Why can't we find umpires? We can't find umpires because parents are following them to the car over a 6 and 7 year old game and riding them throughout the game and getting personal with them. And, you know, or we're having a tough time finding teachers. Why? Because everything's personal. And, you know, I feel for the people that are defenseless, and coaches are one of them too. People are difficult on coaches, and coaches can't respond. And you know, you can't respond to everybody on social media. You can't respond to the daggers that are sent. And, you know, but that's what I learned most from the people that I coached with are toughness. You know, the people that I said toughness and stick with your vision, stick with, it's a growth process, have your goals and, you know, try to be the best you can be. You're going to be criticized either way, good or bad.
Yeah, I'm still trying to be better with social. I try to not interact as much. I'm trying to let more things go and be more of an observer now through social, where I'll look and try. I think as a human, if you see something that maybe is negative or you don't agree with, I think your first reaction is going to be to jump in there. And I'm trying to be much better myself personally of just observing what's out there and almost treating it as entertainment now and not interacting with it. And it's been much better headspace for me personally. I know everybody teaches his own, but for me personally, headspace wise, it's been better.
You can't win on there. You can't win on there. And what I've learned is I wish I could shut that out. That's part of our program and enhancing our program and showing off some of the great things that our student athletes do on a daily basis. But at the same time, it's very, very toxic and it's very, very tough. And so I'm able to manage it because I didn't have a cell phone in college. That's where these poor kids, yes, it's their world. They revolve around this and then they create their own world in these social media platforms. So it's like, you know, it's very, very hard to get out. So like, I have great sympathy for these kids. These kids are dealing with just a time where they need to, you know, understanding mindfulness is critical. Understanding, you know, that not everything's going to be great and not everything's perfect and the world's not perfect and, you know, not everybody's going to be the best there is, you know. It's just
I said it yesterday with some of the, you know, stuff that's going on with some of the athletes out there now. I'm like, the narrative has to get back to that life is not going to be easy. And this is the hard part for kids now, is because they see the best bolt, so they assume that every day is supposed to be like your best day ever. And with life and the journey, probably 90% of your days are probably not going to go how you want. If 10% of your days go exactly how you want, you're probably living a pretty good life, where that needs to be the expectation and the narrative that we get back to, is that part of the human journey is the struggle piece of it. And it's very rarely is it going to go exactly how you want. And that should be an expectation. And yes, turn that into a positive, that, okay, it's not going to go how I want it to be, but I'm going to turn it into something good, even if life hands me something that's really bad.
I mean, our social workers do a great job here, and they talk about it. It's okay not being okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a big Chicago person, love Michael Jordan, The Last Dance. And, you know, he talks about everything positive or negatively and taking it as a positive. And that's a challenge. And like, it's a challenge to do that. It's easy to say that, but it's another thing to actually act on that. And then it's another thing to be mindful when things around you are really tough. And breathing does help, though. Yeah. Breathing does help, and trying to simplify it and trying to get present and trying to realize that you, but you know, these poor kids, depression is what happened to you. Anxiety is what's coming up in the future. Yeah. Okay. So once you understand what exactly anxiety and depression are, from there, you can say, okay, anxiety is a fear of the future. And it's something that hasn't happened yet. How can we get ourselves to stay present and breathe and focus on that next pitch and have that, you know, pitch by pitch mentality? And it's just, I think it's easy to say, but it's difficult to manage. And you're right. It takes daily practice.
That's
it,
a rewiring thing too, because a lot of the anxiety of what you think is going to happen and how bad it's going to be, 90% of it never happens. So that narrative that you're having with yourself, and that this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, 90% of it never happens. So you just created a narrative that's probably never going to happen. And that's why the rewiring piece and the practice piece is important, because once you get better at that, those negative narrative thoughts and the what ifs, they never even come into play anymore. But it takes something doing, you have to do it over and over and over and over again. And, you know, I'm still continually growing on that path, but 5 years, you know, in the past, my conversations in between my ears are way different now than they were 5 years ago. Now I'm not coaching anymore either, so that takes a little bit of those negative thoughts out there as a coach that you have sometimes, but Again, that's a daily practice piece that has gotten better. So some of those thoughts that I used to have don't even come in anymore.
Yeah, and the resources of the ABCA has just been outstanding, getting that stuff out there, getting the message out there. The work you're doing on a daily basis is wonderful. And the mental coaches and the people that you've had on talking about breathing. And look, you're not taking every little thing from every person, but you're grabbing little things that can work that you feel like can stick. And, you know, and that's another part of coaching. It's like, you know, there's a lot of different ways to say something, and the way you say something might work for one person and might not work for the next person. And how do you reframe the thought of hitting the ball up the middle, which is a simple thing, but, you know, saying, hey, we're going to see something middle away, or, hey, try to hit one off the center field wall, or, hey, you know, tell yourself you're going to hit a line drive here. There's just different ways of saying hit the ball up the middle and something's going to work and grabbing those pieces. But the mental part is the same way, you know, but it's a challenge. It's a challenge for all of our coaches especially the high school coaches in Illinois, because, you know, it's tough. People are tough, and it's a tough business. And
you're in a tough area. It's the score. Boy. I say it all the time, the Chicagoland area, all the guys that I coached from that area, I blame it on the score, because the score is just a bunch of negative talk about somebody's not doing this and somebody's not. You hear it all the time. You have to, like, physically turn that radio station off, because if not.
You have to. Kevin Cohen and I talked today about it. Like, I think sometimes people think we're, like, pro coaches. That's, like, we're pros, and you know, we're getting paid on this grand scheme of things and not like a small stipend. And you know, that's sometimes, but you know, that it's a good thing too. Expectations are good, and it creates, you know, it creates momentum, but you got to take the good with the bad. But yeah, it's funny.
Do you have a fail forward moment? Do you have something you thought was going to sidetrack you? I ask this to everybody, but do you have something that you thought was going to sidetrack you, and looking back now, was turned out okay?
Yeah. You know, I wasn't drafted at like my fourth year in college. I thought that was going to be a thing, and I thought it was going to happen. And I thought it was the most devastating thing that can happen. And, you know, I'll never forget, you know, my dad was like, well, you got to get a job now. And he refocused me right away. Get a job now. Here's your cell phone bill. Here's this bill. And this is the real world. This is life. And, you know, I thought that was going to be the worst thing that ever happened to me. It brought me to independent ball for a couple of years, which is an even greater experience that I had. I was lucky enough. I had Coach Taggart. I had Coach Haynes, Andy Haynes, who's now in the big leagues. And he was my first coach. And Greg Taggart, and I took a lot from him. And independent ball was very, very – it's a tough environment, but I got lucky. I played under those two, and they really – you know, help guide me. But I thought it was going to be the worst thing. And I gained so much from those 2 years in independent ball and from those teammates that I had. And, but I thought that was, when I didn't get drafted, I thought that was the end. I was like, what is there to live for? And, you know, and that's what I tell these kids too in counseling. It's like, you know, one day you're going to have a child, and, you know, hopefully God allows you to have that. And if you do get that opportunity, you know, boy, it's just like, it makes you whole. And that's not to say if you don't have kids, you're not going to be whole, but you know, whatever, there's going to be experiences that come up in your life professionally and personally that allow you to, you wouldn't realize how much fun it is, you know, and you think something's the end.
Greg Taggart is another good example of the many paths you can have in the game of baseball. He's made a life out of coaching independent baseball, and I actually played for Tag as well. And it's just amazing what he's done and the type of career that he's had just in independent baseball. It's phenomenal.
He's amazing.
Best demeanor for indie ball, because everybody's disgruntled and has the best demeanor because he's a really good coach, but he's a great manager. He's a phenomenal manager for that level because he understands people.
He's very straightforward. I was a role player for him, and he was so good to me, and I always respected his honesty, even if it wasn't something that I wanted to hear. And he would, you know, there was times I wanted to play, and I felt like I should have been in the lineup, and he was very clear and direct with me, like, hey, this is what I see, and got to be patient. And, you know, I was very appreciative of that, and that was something I learned most from him. And Andy Haynes was
Andy's was another awesome one.
He was just
genuine, both human being. Guys,
just character. I mean, that character and commitment, and, you know, just doing things the right way all the time. And he was great, you know. And independent ball, you know, the guys that make it from independent ball to the big leagues, it's just, you know, such a challenge, you know. And you don't know independent ball until you've been in and done it, but everyone thinks they can play independent ball. That's why I was yes. I could have played. I'm like,
a lot of those conversations with guys that had a hard time getting on the field, and they're like, well, I'll just go play independent ball. I'm like, if you can't play for us, You have no chance of going to play independent ball. You have no chance.
People don't understand independent ball. And I was like, you know, I have friends who are like, oh, I could have done that. I'm like, come on, man. You can barely play catch with me. And, you know, it's a challenge for you to run out of the house. So, but yeah, people think like independent ball is this easy task. And
it's getting better now too, because they've cut all the minor league teams. It's going to continue to get better, and you're going to continue to see players go straight from indie ball to the big leagues. And it's happened multiple times in the last 6 years where pitchers, especially pitchers, have signed from indie ball and gone and pitched in the big leagues.
The only issue I could see with independent ball is like, you know, it needs help financially for the player, because the player is taking a year of their life and not making any money, no job, nothing. And so if they can help the player, because, you know, there might be that great player that just needs to get a job and he has to support some people, and he has people that he's responsible for. And, you know, that's going to be the challenge with independent ball. But yeah, everything's shrinking down. Now independent ball is going to be robust, but is it a matter of, you know, players that have the money to do it can do it for a year? And if we can financially figure out a way to help independent ball too and keep it afloat, I guess, I understand can't finance everything, but somehow help the player to the best of their ability and allow the guys not to quit versus because of financial reason.
Any routines you like, morning or evening routines that you're doing that you like?
Yeah. My wife, Meg, got me on morning workouts. So that is,
Just you two, or you guys go to a gym?
Well, so we have three kids, so we got to get up, and so we have 5 a.m. workouts. So we split up the week. So basically I get 3 days, she gets 4, and that's been the best thing for me. And, you know, I work with, on the south side of Chicago. We got a local boxing guy. So we go in there and do boxing and, you know, do circuit training. And it's been, it's really changed my life in a real positive way. Here's what, and everybody's different on how they handle stress, but for me, it's extreme exercise. Exercise helps me simplify the process, allows me to help to get present. If I didn't have that, and what I find is, like, you know, my wife, thankfully, like I said, got me on those morning workouts. It's like, if you don't do it in the morning, sometimes it's hard to get back into that gym at 6, 7 p.m. And until you get that morning routine, like once it hits you and you're on it, it's tough. I have a tough time ever going back to afternoon workouts.
I'm with you. I couldn't. It's just with work and then with kids, with young kids especially, you can't do it. It's no chance to be able to do it. Like, it's,
yeah,
it's
I give
so
people
hard.
Credit.
Anybody that can figure out an afternoon workout that's got young kids, no chance. No chance.
Yeah, it's tough. But yeah, that's my, you know, that's my routine. Try to stay away. And I think I heard you say it, and it's putting down the yes. phone in the afternoon when I get home with my kids. And
I still have a hard time with it.
I do. And because I'm getting text messages in season all the time, like late at night, and that's okay. That's part of, I like that open form of communication, but I've been trying to put my phone away and be more present with Meg and the kids, and, you know, just be there and be active and try to be a better husband, be a better father. And, you know, like I said, I'm just not perfect at that. I'm trying to get better.
What are you using communicating with your players? I mean, with sending out practice plans, with, you know, are you using WhatsApp? What are you using to group me? What are you using with your guys? Or is it just straight individual text?
I just do straight text. And so I just put it out there at the beginning of the year. Hey guys, just don't respond. If you need to respond, respond individually to me. But yeah, I'm on a group text with the boys, and honestly, it's the best thing. We never miss anything. One thing that we do at the high school that I like is I do as many weekly emails to parents. Sometimes I feel like it's better to over-communicate than under-communicate with parents and try to open up those lines of communication. So I try to give them practice plans and just give them an idea. You know, and I think once they see how hard it is, because, you know, in high school coaching, there's so many changes to the schedule. You know, you're always changing the schedule. I feel like sometimes it's like daily. So, you know, trying to communicate with the parents has been just putting them on a weekly mail, BCC, everybody. I have like a little thing, Word doc, copy and paste, try to keep it as simple as I can, keep it routine for me. With the players, the best way is text. They don't miss anything via text. And, you know, if they have any issues, they always respond to me, you know, individually, and they're great about it. They're great.
What are some final thoughts, or maybe something I should have asked you that I didn't?
You know, final thoughts are, I appreciate being on here. I mean, it's, you know, really humble, and, it's just, you know, baseball is just the best. And, I just love, you know, you talk about the clinic, you talk about everybody. It's just, you know, how much people love the game. And that keeps me motivated, just how much they love the game and how much they're trying to get an edge, how much people are trying to get better. And the one thing that you asked earlier about getting back into the game was the competitive piece. I missed competition. And for me, I was having trouble finding that in the business world. I think, you know, my dad is in sales and I think he finds it through sales. I just couldn't find it in sales. And I think everybody's different. For me, it's baseball. I just love the competitive piece of baseball and getting your team to be the best they possibly can on a daily basis. And I'm sure that's why all the other coaches, but it's just the resources that we have and what you guys provide and the free materials that you have. And I think it's just the relationships and your guys' ability to give back, the colleges and people like you giving back. It's tumbling.
Hey, tell Tyler I'll come work the Sparks camp next winter for old time's sake if he wants me to. I haven't done it in about four years. I know COVID probably shut some things down, but tell, I mean, that's how I met almost everybody in that area working the Sparks camp or all the other winter camps that we had in that area. That's how I met everybody in that area was because of those camps.
So I'll give you just one last example of the Sparks. Like they helped bring college baseball to the Midwest for, and maybe not the Midwest, I can't speak for, but Illinois, the Chicagoland area. The job the travel programs did, they allowed us now to be on a more national stage. We have kids going all across the country. When I was in high school, it's funny you talked about Evansville. That was like my dream school. We had a kid my age, Eric Liss. I'm sure you know who Eric Liss is. He was the best hitters all time. And he played at a local school. And I remember he got to Evansville. I was like, oh, man, like, you know, that was like one of my dream schools. And, you know, in the Midwest, you were kind of at that time just really limited on your options. And now I'm very happy and pleased with what the travel programs have done that allowed us to have kids going all over the United States.
Yep. It's amazing just to see how the facilities have helped upper Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, those areas. Now those kids are coming out of high school just as good as everybody else is now, and you're seeing it.
Yeah, absolutely. They do. It's just skill development is really at a high level right now.
Yeah. All right, Johnny, I appreciate it. All right. Good luck with the rest of the year. And I'm sure I'll run into you this summer at some point.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for your time.
I enjoyed my discussion with Coach McCarthy. It's a great feel for the pulse of this generation of kids. I wish him the best in getting things turned around at Homewood Flossmoor. He's a good example of the impact you can have on your players as a coach. Coach Robichaud's impact can still be felt even after he's gone. Thanks again to John Litchfield, Zach Hale, Jim Richardson, and Matt West in the ABCA office for all their help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email, rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter and TikTok at @coachb_ABCA, Instagram RyanBrownlee17, or direct message me via the MyABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you.